Well, in his first letter to the Corinthians, St. Paul spoke of the three things at last, namely faith, hope, and love. And following that Pauline prompt, our tradition has identified those three as the great theological virtues, meaning the virtues around which the spiritual life really is structured. Now, here's a conviction of mine. I think one reason why religion is often seen in a negative light today is that people misunderstand dramatically what we mean by faith, hope, and love. The distortion of those three has led to all kinds of problems. First of all, faith. I know I've spoken about this before, but I think it bears repeating because in today's world, faith is maybe the most misunderstood of the theological virtues. How do people in the secular world tend to see faith? Well, in a culture besotted with the physical sciences, they tend to see faith as bad science or primitive science, something lying below the threshold of reason. Superstition, credulity, naivete, that's what faith is. So simple-minded people have faith, serious people have science. So which of the new atheists, was it Daniel Dennett, you know, said that atheists should be called the brights, and religious people, I guess, would be the dulls or something, you know. Well, in the Catholic tradition, anyway, faith is never something that lies below the threshold of reason. Let me just say that as emphatically as I can. Faith is not sub-rational or irrational. It's not something that fails to meet the demands of reason. The Catholic Church hates superstition. It's against credulity. It's against naivete. And consistently throughout its history, the Catholic tradition supports reason, the sciences, philosophy, etc. So what is faith? Faith is indeed a surrender. Faith indeed involves a kind of leap into the darkness, but it's a surrender on the far side of reason. It's a leap into a darkness beyond the place illumined by philosophy and science and reason. Faith is a trusting confidence in a God who can't be controlled by reason. Now, flip the thing around, too, because I think this is illuminating. Think of the number of people of faith who are also people of very serious scientific interest, from Georges Lemaître, the formulator of the Big Bang Theory, Father George Coyne, the for a long time director of the Vatican Observatory. Think of someone like Stanley Yockey, who was a Benedictine priest and also a high-level scientist, Teilhard de Chardin, on and on. What do all these people see? They see, as they reverence the sciences, that the sciences themselves rest upon something not unlike faith. For example, that faith, that confidence in the intelligibility of the world, without which science can't get off the ground. Lonergan saw this very clearly too. The faith in the work done by thousands of other scientists that they themselves have never verified. If you're doing scientific work, you're basing your work on all kinds of unverified data that was given to you by lots of other people. Or think of an Einstein, who all his life was searching for the unified field theory. There was a sort of imagined goal of his intellectual work that was not itself the product of reason, but was accepted on something like faith, you might say. In other words, in short, the war between faith and reason is a myth born of a misunderstanding of faith. People that rightly grasp the meaning of faith see no conflict between the two. Okay, there's faith. Hope. Hope is also, in our world, grossly misunderstood. Many people would wonder, you know, after an event like Newtown just a few weeks ago, and name any other great moral or physical tragedy, people say, how could you possibly be a person of hope? The trouble there is people are misidentifying hope as a kind of optimism. You know, all will work out fine. Everything's going to be great. If God exists, if I have faith in God, well then God will just eliminate all such tragedy and suffering and problems from the world. But here's the thing about it. Look at the Bible. Look at the Bible. Every page of the Bible is written by somebody of enormous faith in God, right? They all passionately believe in God. But the Bible is filled with accounts of tragedies and suffering and murder, attempts at genocide, rape, the death of children, on and on and on. And nobody in the Bible is thinking, well, somehow these two are utterly irreconcilable. I can't believe in God and then accept all these things. Well, no, they take them almost for granted. The two can coincide. To make it real specific, think of someone like Jeremiah. Was there anyone in history who had greater hope in God than Jeremiah? But yet Jeremiah witnesses the destruction of Jerusalem, this utter disaster for an Old Testament Jew. Think of David, a man that hoped in the Lord all the time, but yet was pursued by Saul. Think of St. Paul himself. You know, no one had greater hope in God than St. Paul, but yet Paul endures shipwreck and torture, and eventually he was put to death. So, what is hope? It's not giddy or naive optimism. Not some, you know, naive belief that God will eliminate all of suffering. Hope, as a theological virtue, is the conviction that God is the sovereign Lord. God is the sovereign Lord of all creation. He's the sovereign Lord of the visible and the invisible. God presides over, in His love, the totality of created reality. How it's all making sense, well, God understands that utterly. I often don't understand it. I don't see it. Hope is not optimism. It's a conviction that God is the sovereign Lord who is commanding and leading and guiding His universe. Therefore, it's utterly reconcilable with the existence of all sorts of darkness. Hope isn't naive, just as faith isn't naive. It's a trust in the ultimate sovereignty of God. Think of someone like Julian of Norwich, the great English mystic, who said, you know, famously, and T.S. Eliot quoted her, "All will be well. All manner of things will be well." That's not an optimist talking. Like, there'll never be a new town. There'll never be a tsunami tragedy. No, it means ultimately God is in charge of His creation. And in that I put my confidence. So, faith, hope, lastly, love. How is love misconstrued? Well, it's misconstrued as being a nice guy, right? To be a person of love is to be a nice guy, a nice gal. Or as Flannery O'Connor said, to have a heart of gold. Or Merton in The Seven Story Mountain recalls when he was in high school in England, his professor said, look at 1 Corinthians 13, the hymn to love, and just put the word gentleman in there, and you'll understand it properly. A gentleman is this and that. So that, you know, being a person of love is being a gentleman. Now, again, nothing in the world wrong with being a gentleman or having a heart of gold or being a nice guy. But that isn't love. Love is willing the good of the other and then doing something concrete about it. It's not an emotion, not an attitude. It's a move of the will to want the good of the other and do something about it. That's love. Now, once you see that love is altogether reconcilable with not being a very nice guy sometimes, not being a gentleman sometimes. And what I mean is tough love. You know, if you're challenging someone who's caught in an addiction and you have to say some pretty tough things, make some really strong demands, you're being anything but nice at that moment. But you are being a person of love. Or think of the call to conversion. My generation hardly ever heard the call to conversion. We heard God is love, and therefore everything's fine. You know, but the call to conversion is ingredient in love. Why? Because love is wanting the good of the other. If someone's on an errant path, someone's in a sinful state of life, the loving thing to do is to get them out of it, is to shake them out of their complacency, change them. So love is utterly reconcilable with being not a nice guy, being ungentlemanlike. Love, as Dostoevsky said, and Dorothy Day famously quoted him, love is a harsh and dreadful thing. Well, you know, nice guys. Nice guys aren't harsh and dreadful. Maybe not, but people of love can be, because love is a willing of what's truly good for the other. So as I say, I think one reason why religion is often seen negatively today is people don't understand what we mean by these three things, faith, hope, and love. We need to put, I think, some teeth back into these theological virtues.